Hello and welcome to the Think Wildlife podcast. I am Anish Banerjee, the founder of Think Wildlife Foundation. We are a wildlife NGO run completely by college students with the aim of supporting alternative livelihood and conservation enterprise projects around India, while also raising funds for wildlife rescue and rehabilitation. We launched this podcast in hopes to raise awareness about the various amazing conservation projects happening in and around India and the rest of the world. Today we have Stuart Chapman, who is the lead for the Tiger Alive initiative of WWF. He has over 20 years of conservation experience and is currently on an ambitious pursuit to see all 40 species of wild cats. Welcome, Stuart, to our podcast. It is a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
You're on a mission to see all 41 species of cats around the world. What sparked your interest in wild cats and encouraged you on this trip?
Difficult to know exactly when it started, but certainly when I was a child, I had posters on my wall, and that stayed from the age of 5 or 6 all the way up to 15 or 16. And the two cat posters that stayed throughout my childhood, one was a pair of cheetahs and one was a tiger swimming. And maybe that's why when I was a teenager, I didn't have a girlfriend because I had animal pictures on my wall. So it's always been a childhood fascination. So I think that's where it's all started.
What has been your most memorable sighting?
Yeah, well, as I creep up the list, so I've now seen 26 wild cat species out of 40, the 41st being domestic cats, so I guess that doesn't count. So it's getting harder and harder. It's quite easy to get the first 10, maybe even 15, but then it gets really hard. You have to put a lot of time and effort into it. And because I live in Asia and I've lived here for 20 years, seeing a cat in Asia means more to me than seeing a rare wild cat in Europe or Africa, because I've spent so much of my conservation career in Asia. I have a deeper appreciation of what it takes and the relevance of the animal too. So one that's been on my bucket list for near the top of my bucket list for at least 10 years was the Asian golden cat. And I did some research and found that Eagle Nest Wildlife Sanctuary in India was a place that they were quite frequently seen. I mean, I wouldn't say regularly, but frequently, in terms of once a month, they would be reported by birders. So I hired a guide, got the permission, and I went there in March. It's a spectacular place. There's one road that goes through it, but it's a dead end. And so this is the perfect place for cat spotting. One of the things you have to do is cover a lot of ground. There's no point walking because they will hear, see, smell you 10 minutes before you even get to that spot. So the best way is to be in a vehicle so they can't see you, they can't smell you, and you cover a lot of ground quickly. So anyway, we were driving one evening, and I will never forget it because I nearly blew it. And the spotter that was with me said, "Oh, look, eye shine, side of the road." And of course, we got this eye shine, and it was coming from deep within this sort of bamboo clump. And it was clearly sitting there or frozen. And we could see some reddish fur, but it could have been a barking deer. It could have been a muntjac. So the key now is, can we see the facial features? And if you can see the face and it's red, then it has to be golden cat. So we got out the car because it wasn't moving. And for some reason, I was so excited, I didn't really sit down and focus on this spot where the face could be. I was moving to try and get a picture, moving to try and get a... And I missed the moment where it moved and the guide said, "I saw its face." And he said, so it's definitely a cat, but I've only seen a little piece of fur that's red. So now I'm thinking, does it count? The guide said it was a cat. I've seen the fur, but I haven't seen the feature that would tell me it was a cat. I haven't actually seen the animal. I've just seen part of it. And then it moved. It then crawled away, and it didn't come out the side where we hoped, or forward. It went backwards. So I got in the car, and I was like, all my gremlins and demons were coming out saying, you blew it. You didn't see it. It was in front of you. You're going to have to wait another 10 years. Ah, it was awful, awful. And, of course, the guide was excited and was saying, yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it. And I was just getting this big shadow coming over. I was like, oh, did I really fumble it? And so we were up on the, we were zigzagging down the mountain. And we'd probably spent 30 minutes there. And then something unbelievable happened. And it hasn't happened before and never happened since. Oh, I don't think it'll ever happen again. We turned the corner, and the same cat had walked down the side of the mountain after we had guessed we'd scared it off, and it stepped out onto the road 2 meters in front of me, in front of the car, just as we turned the corner. And it just stood there in its magnificence, bright red golden beauty, just stared at me. And the angels, if you believe that kind of stuff, started singing, and oh my God, I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I got some terrible photo because I was, again, so excited. And it walked up in front of the car, yet ran down the road, and then ran off into the bushes. I was elated. And I think partly because I had been so low in that 10 minutes before it came out. And secondly, because I'd tried so many times to see it and failed, and I got a second chance. And that's pretty rare. Very often you get one chance. And with the rare stuff, I mean, sure, tigers, you just go to the park again and another time and you'll see it. But these rare beasts, you normally get one shot. So I was really lucky.
I mean, even tigers are not that easy to see. Like, it took me about 30 safaris to see my first tiger. Now I've seen a lot of tigers, but it took me like 2 years almost to see my first tiger. And I've been across India. So right now, which species are you currently looking for?
So the second one, actually there's two on my list in Asia that I haven't seen. The clouded leopard. And the clouded leopard was split into two separate species about 12 years ago. So there's the clouded leopard species found on Sumatra and Borneo. And I've seen that one. But the mainland, which starts essentially from Malaysia and comes all the way up to here in Nepal, Bhutan, India, the mainland clouded leopard I haven't seen. I've done five trips, dedicated trips in the last 2 years here in the Himalayas to a place where they're meant to be. Yeah, it's been 4 or 5 weeks and I have not seen it. And I'm trying again in November. I'm going to, is it Singalila? How do you say
it? Singalila National Park in Darjeeling.
Near Darjeeling in Assam. That's meant to be a good place. So I'm going to try there again. So that's number one. The number two, I guess, would be Eurasian lynx. And when I went to Ladakh earlier this year, part of the reason I was going, other than being in Ladakh, which is probably my favorite place in Asia, part of the reason I was going there was the chance of seeing lynx. We didn't, and it's probably best to go in winter. And I've done the winter trip and seen snow leopard up in Hemis. So I'd like to see those two, but definitely clouded leopard is the top of the list and is probably the hardest cat to see in Asia. I've now jinxed it, haven't I?
No, it is the hardest cat. Like, we've heard this from quite a few people who have seen a lot more cats than I have. But I've heard there have been sightings of Eurasian lynx around Hemis. What are some challenges you have faced in this quest to see all the 40 cats?
Time and money. As it's getting harder, I need to spend more time. And of course, I work. And the second thing is the cost. It's an expensive hobby. And so I obviously try and reduce the costs by traveling locally. So hence I'm based in Kathmandu. So I've been up to Langtang National Park, which is very close, 4 times looking for it. And I will cross into India, northern India particularly, to look for these animals. If I want to see some of the cats that are burning a hole in my list, I have to travel much further. So that becomes more expensive. So I just have to plan it so I don't blow all my savings on this quest. And as you will know, or any of your listeners will know, that the moment in life you fix a target and say that target is, I want to climb Everest, for example, then everything that you do, all the websites, the clothing you buy, the training, the people you talk to, it all leads you in that direction because that's the focus. And since I identified my quest, which is to see all the wild cats of the world, and I'm not sure if anyone's ever done it, but I don't think many have. It's led me in that direction. You know, again, websites I look at, the clothing I buy, the gear I buy, the time I spend planning these trips. It's all leading in that direction. So I'm actually, don't bump into me in a party. I'm really boring. That's all I want to talk about is wild cats or occasionally wildlife. And there's not many people like that, maybe in the places that I've been to. So, but if I find somebody who is interested, good luck, because you won't escape. I'm just going to talk to you the whole night.
What have you learned from this quest?
How rare these cats are and how persecuted they are. And the strange thing is that everywhere I go, the animal that's persecuted takes on different dimensions. And what I mean is that if you go to South Africa, the animal that all the farmers want to kill is the caracal. And the caracal there is now, you know, 5-6 times smaller than the leopard, right? And then, you know, even in Scotland, you know, so my ancestors are from Scotland, the wild cat population is basically extinct. So there's the only cat ever found other than the lynx there. The lynx has probably been gone 400 or 500 years. So even wild cat was persecuted, and its crime, oh, it eats the game birds, eats the grouse, or eats something that man doesn't want it to eat. And so it really isn't about size. And so you'd assume, well, it's hardest to live with tigers and leopards. Well, of course, they're a danger to us. But actually, once they're gone, the next thing becomes a problem. It's then the next smallest thing. Then it becomes wolf. Then it becomes dole. Then it becomes whatever you name it. We will just go down the food chain. And everywhere I've been, I'm there looking for this cat, supporting the wildlife economy, by the way. So spending time on guides and spending time in hotels, and I always talk about it, but trying to kind of get that balance for the wildlife. I will hear stories of, the person down the road, killed one recently. And I'll say, why? Well, and then there's a reason. I just find that persecution keeps these fascinating, beautiful creatures at very low numbers. And it just means you have to spend more and more time to try and find them. But again, anyone listening, you know, support the wildlife economy. Do it and tell people you're doing it. So locals know why you're there. And it becomes maybe a small reason not to kill something.
So in the bigger picture, why are wildcats so important in the conservation field?
I mean, if just looking at that sort of whole sort of food chain, for me, if I go into a place and the carnivores, so let's keep it at carnivores, if the large carnivores are present, so whether it's in the highlands, it could be wolf and snow leopard, or in the lowlands, it could be tiger and dhole, for example. If they are present in a landscape or a park, it tells me that the entire park or ecosystem is functioning and is intact. Because for those animals to survive, we know that they need to have X number of large body prey to survive, but also that they have a top-down effect, and they call it like the trophic cascade. So that kind of the food cascade is controlled by that the presence of that animal. And it will limit the numbers of certain species and keep everything in balance. The moment you remove that carnivore, whatever its size, from the ecosystem, because it's either hunted out or disease or whatever it might be, the ecosystem breaks and it's no longer functioning as it was designed. And then you get too many wild pigs, too many rabbits, too many of something because... too many, you know, because something's missing. And so one of the things I've learned is that when I see a functioning ecosystem, it not only sounds and looks different to one that's broken, but I feel different when I'm in it. I celebrate it and I enjoy it because there's not many places like it, unfortunately.
Well, much of the conservation focus has revolved around charismatic larger cats like tigers, leopards, lions, but all the smaller species of cats somewhat get ignored. So what do you think can be done to help the smaller wild cats in terms of conservation?
Yeah, I'm a supporter of both, actually. I'm a supporter of flagship species conservation. I think that as humans, we relate to a particular species for all sorts of reasons. It could be cultural, it could be the R factor, you know, they look in someone's eyes to be appealing. It could be for ecological reasons. But so these flagships are useful ways to get mass public interested in conservation, whether it's tigers or gorillas or snow leopards, whatever it might be. So I think that's a good entry point. So that's one thing. And I think that everything that we know, of course, what we know about conservation, when we protect tigers in a place or protect snow leopards, there's a cascade effect. Everything benefits. If you to protect tigers, that means you have to be removing snares, stopping deforestation, et cetera, and everything else benefits. You know, jungle cats benefit from that. Rusty spotted cats benefit from it. Dholes benefit. So we know that there's a link. But in terms of getting more public interest in a particular small cat, let's say the lynx, I think it depends on where you are. In a country like India or Nepal, we're spoiled for choice. There are so many flagships or potential species to focus on that it's quite difficult. But in other countries where this would be the top predator, and in most of Europe this would be the top feline predator, having lynx, then it's much easier to then just focus on that one species and say, we need to bring it back, or we need to live with it. We need to tolerate it more because it's all that we have. So I think that job of focusing on something small depends a lot about where you are and what are the other competing interests that might distract your audience. But I'll be quite honest with you. I will equally spend time looking for bats in bat caves, spend an hour staring at a tree looking for a particular squirrel. So I'm you know, not only cat crazy, I'm mammal mad, you know, so I will do all those things. So I'm probably not the best person to ask about Because I love them all.
You are the leader of the WWF's Tiger Alive Initiative. So, could you just talk a bit about this program?
Yeah. So the program started about 14 years ago when tiger populations were an all-time low. Maybe there were only 3,000 animals in 2009. And there was a coming together of tiger conservationists, donors, world leaders, or Asian leaders that came together in a conference in Russia and agreed that efforts needed to be doubled to protect tigers, which also included doubling the tiger population to try to get to 6,000 animals by today, by 2022, by the next year of the tiger, which is this 12-year cycle. And so WF's program has had a dedicated team trying to improve the conservation conditions for tigers, trying to support countries that have tigers, trying to support fundraising, technical support, being a sort of a communications hub in terms of celebrating when things are going well and putting the spotlight on when things aren't going so well. It's been leading up to this moment, this year of the tiger, 2022. And so today, you may have seen about, I guess about 3 months ago, the IUCN Red List came out and said there are now approximately, and now we're saying 4,500 tigers, so no longer 3,200. So certainly more tigers than there were 12 years ago. And there's been a new estimate that came out from Nepal, which nearly tripled its tigers over the 12-year period. We're expecting more results from India. That announcement will probably happen next year, and that trajectory continues to go up. Russia just said make an announcement that it had around 700 tigers, so that's an increase from what they've previously said. So when you start adding up all these figures, we're going to get very close to 6,000. I mean, certainly the upper limit. And everything has a range, right? There's a lower estimate, there's an upper estimate, and then somewhere in the middle is the mean, right? So there's a bit of guesswork going on, but we're going to get very close to that figure of 6,000, that aspirational figure of 6,000. And I think it shows that when you get that alignment of political, public, donor, NGO interest in a particular cause, it is possible to, as we say, bend the curve upwards, i.e., populations are going down, and then what you want is recovery, which means then the curve or the numbers of those animals start to increase. So I think that's been a model that's certainly been copied for snow leopards, and I would say anybody who wants to achieve single species conservation for all the right reasons, this is a good model to follow.
It seems like the 2x TX2 campaign has been quite a success. So recently, the second International Tiger Forum was hosted in Vladivostok. What are the outcomes of this conference, and what are your opinions about the results from this?
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot changed earlier this year with the invasion of Ukraine. And so the event that was held in Russia wasn't of the same scale that we had been hoping for the last 12 years. And so tigers, unfortunately, didn't get their big moment in the spotlight. That isn't to say it can't happen within the year of the tiger. We still have until, I think, January the 21st. So there could be another event that's hosted by a government. But look, this is just one of those realities. Like COVID changed everything. There were certain things that we were planning to do that we couldn't do because of COVID, and similarly, because of the conflict. So I'm hoping that tigers will have another event and that will be in the next few months. There are rumors about certain countries hosting that event, but certainly for tiger conservation, we should have another event to agree on the next 12-year plan. The TX2 or T Tigers Times 2 was the kind of rallying call for the last 12 years. And we need to identify what that next rallying call is. to inspire conservationists, governments, and donors to continue to support tiger conservation.
That's great. So my final question for you is that what are some ways which the public can help a wildcat conservation?
Oh, become a fanatic and go and look for your felid friends in the wild. Start your own list. Because the more people who are talking about it and doing it, the more those who are living with these cats recognize that there's a value greater alive than dead. If you can't get to a cat forest or grassland near you, join a conservation NGO that does conservation work. Lots to choose from, local NGOs, international NGOs that do great cat conservation work. Then join those and be an armchair supporter. And you can be a cat fanatic or cat crazy like me, sitting in your armchair and watching Nat Geo and supporting one of these organizations. But maybe cats aren't your thing, in which case maybe primates are, maybe birds are. Find that entry point to the natural world and be obsessed with it. I think we need more obsessions, more hobbies that are linked to the natural world. And so this is a way of catting. For all my frustration when I don't see the cat species I want to see, I'm out there in nature, and I'm seeing lots of other things that I also celebrate, including just being there, being in the wild somewhere, and hoping that I see, I guess the trophy species that I'm really looking for. But I get so much more out of it, and if I don't see it, I always go back, I always try again. So so I would say make cats or conservation your hobby and join an NGO.
Thank you so much for that. That is a very inspiring answer, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.